This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, originating from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. And we welcome the audience of WRKF in Baton Rouge and WWNO in New Orleans for Friday Politics. Your number is 877-217-5757. Please send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. Robin Dow is producing, and we start with Susie Taro. In just a bit, we'll hear from Dan Moldea, the intrepid reporter from Washington, D.C., and he'll expound at length about the Democratic National Convention. Susie Taro, as we know, is former commissioner of elections in Louisiana, an office that she was elected to, and then she led the fight to disband it and save the state some money, and now basically those duties are consolidated within the Secretary of State's office. And she also, as we know, is the pride of New Orleans, was a longtime member of the city council in the great city of New Orleans, and a graduate of Tulane University. Good morning, Susie Taro.
Good morning. How are you today?
Doing fine. And
good.
And Susie, today is involved intricately with the state's museums, are you not?
Yeah, I'm chairman of the board of the Louisiana State Museums, which is the museums that are under the lieutenant governor's office.
And you note in a recent editorial that on an inflation-adjusted basis, the current $8.4 million in state funding for the state museum system is 42% less than it was in 2008, and there are more museums in our system now than then. So how can you make an adjustment that would be advantageous to some of the great museums we have in Louisiana?
Well, you know, the I know what prompted that letter was there had been a headline in the paper that there was a group of private individuals that were trying to get the state to give funding for a music jazz museum, $160 million to build it in New Orleans. And we have a fabulous jazz museum. Louisiana State Museums do, as well as the Cabildo, the Fontabla, the Sports Museum in Natchitoches, the Wendell Williams Museum in Patterson, the E.D. White home. So, you know, there are a lot of really fine museums that are woefully understaffed because of these this budget inequity. And I think, and we have capital projects that need to be done at some of these museums, particularly Madame John's Legacy, which is an example of colonial architecture in New Orleans, one of the few, I think it's the only one basically left in the South, and we're just not getting that kind of funding. So it's sort of a plea to the legislature to look at, you know, hey, look at us. We're carrying the history of New Orleans. Of Louisiana. We're not making it up. We have all the original documents. We have the original paintings. You know, the Louisiana Purchase was signed in the Cabildo. It was, you know, it's just that you can't let Louisiana history just deteriorate without some funding.
All right. Well, listener notes, and you alluded to it in your letter, that there is a massive proposal for I think, $35, $40 million civil rights museum, and I think that would be a good thing. But what are your thoughts about whether that is feasible with all these cuts that have taken place to other museums in our state?
Well, that is part of Louisiana State Museum, and there is a display in the New Orleans Convention Center for the Civil Rights Museum. I mean, it is a working museum, but that money that has been has been earmarked for the Civil Rights Museum has been in the capital projects budget at a level like 4 or 5 for almost 30 years. And it's never been moved up. And I think that one of the things that hurts the museum is in the past, there were legislators that really championed the museum. There were Randy Ewing, John Hankel, people like that who understood the museums, who understood the value, that just the educational value. I mean, our students have to take a section of Louisiana history, but we have it. It's there, the original documents, the original artworks, and you know, they don't need something that's just made up. And we have a tremendous civil rights history that should be, told to our public.
Okay. Well, Susie Terrell is with us for a few more moments. If you'd like to get in under the wire, 877-217-5757. As mentioned, she was Commissioner of Elections, first Republican female to be elected statewide. Now there are a couple of others who just got in, and we'll, of course, talk with her. Well, let's start there. And the listener asked, it was a question, this is Holly in the Garden District in Baton Rouge, wanted to know about the so-called glass ceiling. You faced it. It probably is less pronounced now than it was at one time, but we do have a presidential election against a woman and a man. Does that make a difference in contemporary America?
Oh, I should say we'll see. You know, what was interesting in 2003, I guess, I had a race against Mary Landrieu for the U.S. Senate, which was the people on Meet the Press told us it was the first time two women had run against each other for the United States Senate. That has since changed, but I thought that was an interesting note. That was 20 years ago. So maybe there's a sea change coming. I'm not sure it's going to come because of sex. I don't know that people, I mean, maybe people vote for sex. I'm only voting for a man, or I'm only voting for a woman.
Well, there's a huge, huge gender gap here. If the race were only among men, Trump would win. And if it were only among women, Harris would win. So it comes down probably to who votes more, women or men. And right now there are more women than there are men, both voters and people. So in that respect, Harris might have a bit of advantage. But you mentioned that Meet the Press showdown with Tim Russert. I remember it.
Right.
And you and Mary came away not liking each other very much, didn't you?
Well, it was, he was a very good moderator. He kept things calm. And what was interesting is I have a picture with Tim Russert, Mary, me, and Nancy Pelosi, because she was the other guest on that day. And it was before she was Speaker of the House. And they took a picture, you know, at the end of the show of all the guests. So it was, you know, it was interesting when you look at, we have come far. We have elected more women. You know, I personally don't want people just voting for me if I would run again because I was a woman. I would hope they would vote for me because of what I stood for. But there's single issue voters, and one of those issues can definitely be sex.
Well, and you're one of those people. I think turnout will be heavy. It'll be strong on November 5th, but you're one of those people. I'm sure you'll vote because that's what you do. You're a politician and been in public life a long time, but you told me you didn't watch either convention, that you're just basically you're boycotting it. Why?
No, it's just that I know that they are shows put on to show the best of the candidates and the parties. And I just wasn't that interested. I was in Chicago, though, last weekend to watch the Cubs play. But left town on Sunday evening, just when the convention and the traffic were getting started, and the, you know, the police protection, they were everywhere. I think Chicago did a really good job on that, on showing presence of the city, you know, and showing that city cared. I hope the city of New Orleans can pull off the same for the Super Bowl. You know, I felt very safe in Chicago last weekend.
Well, we've got to
hope people feel that way with the Super Bowl.
Well, yeah. Chicago, of course, has some issues, but they handled their convention much better this time than they did in 1968.
For sure. Yeah. Well, before we go, I want to encourage everybody to do a little Googling on the Louisiana State Museum and encouraging their legislators to help fund it.
There you go. Well, hopefully we'll talk again soon. Susie Terrell joining us today from North Carolina, and we're back with Dan Moldea. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, Friday Politics on WRKF Baton Rouge and WWNO New Orleans, and your number is 877-217-5757. Last night, Kamala Harris took the stage in Chicago and became the official nominee of the Democratic Party, accepting that honor with great enthusiasm. And to get a perspective from across the pond, David Smith of The Guardian writes, "It was not a political address for the ages. It was not even the best of the convention. No one can compete with the Obamas," he writes, "but Kamala Harris did enough in her speech accepting the Democratic presidential nomination to put an exclamation mark on one of the most dramatic turnarounds in modern political history. And she made you reflect that you would not want to be Donald Trump facing her in next month's televised debate. A speech that was short on policy and poetry was nevertheless devastating and skewering the menace from Mar-a-Lago," writes Mr. Smith. "Trump can expect the same kind of interrogation when the two go head-to-head in a debate that he says could make most mortals tremble." That might be a bit of a hyperbole, but it will be quite a showdown between the vice president and the former president. And for those who missed it, it wasn't a terribly long speech, I think a little bit less than 40 minutes, but here is how Vice President Harris closed her address to the throng in Chicago.
"In this country, anything is possible, that nothing is out of reach. An America where we care for one another, look out for one another, and recognize that we have so much more in common than what separates us. That none of us has to fail for all of us to succeed. And that in unity there is strength. You know, our opponents in this race are out there every day denigrating America, talking about how terrible everything is. Well, my mother had another lesson she used to teach. Never let anyone tell you who you are. You show them who you are. Let us show each other and the world who we are and what we stand for."
That was Kamala Harris on the stage in Chicago. She's not a newcomer. She's not Sarah Palin, who came out of nowhere to be the vice presidential choice of John McCain in 2008. Kamala Harris was reared on politics in California, which has 1/8 of the American population, and she was DA in San Francisco, Attorney General of California, and U.S. Senator from the great state of California. And now she is vice president and is the Democratic presidential nominee in a race that 74 days out is a dead heat. Now, Dan Moldea, the great reporter from Washington, D.C., is the reporter who blew the lid on scandals involving Bob Livingston and David Vitter of Louisiana, and ultimately, I think you could say, affected their careers dramatically in their cases for the worst, Livingston just gave up the ghost, but he became a highly paid lobbyist, and he's a good man. But he walked away in 1998 on the 19th day of December when Bill Clinton was impeached, and he was about to be Speaker of the House of Representatives. David Vitter, as we know, he lived to fight another day after Dan's reporting, and in 2010 was reelected to the Senate. But in 2015, he lost dramatically by 12 points to a Democrat in Louisiana, which is really hard to do. He lost to John Bell Edwards. But Dan Moldea is a voice from the left, and if you hear our show often enough, you know we have voices of all kinds. But what was your take regarding the convention as a whole and Kamala Harris's performance last night, Dan?
Center left. I still think that you run from the middle and you govern from the middle. So I would just correct you just a little bit. I think I'm center left. I thought the convention was wonderful. I mean, it was. I think it went on a little bit too long for those of us on the East Coast, but I thought it was just spirited and inspirational. And I thought that I had so many favorite moments. I thought the greatest speakers were Hillary, Michelle, Nancy Pelosi, and then of course Kamala. Last night, my favorite moment of all was Michelle talking about how Trump could not deal with these highly educated, successful professionals who just happened to be black, and that who was going to tell him that the job he was seeking was going to be one of those black jobs. I almost fell off my chair. I laughed so hard. And played that over and over and over again. It was one of those brilliant, and it was like her timing was perfect. And it was, anyway, I just thought it was, the Obamas, what can you say? Totally, dignified, classy, intelligent, and inspirational themselves. The Clintons. I thought Bill went on a little bit too long, but we come to expect that from that. But he had great things to say. It seems as though he had departed from his script. But the Clintons, they joyfully revel in their loyalty and devotion to public service. And they always have, and they always will. God bless them for that. Nancy Pelosi, to me, she's the most courageous leader in Washington, and she is, to me, the greatest warrior in Washington. And still to this day, and she is, all of them. And then Kamala really rose to the occasion last night. I mean, let's face it. I immediately turned on Fox News. I wanted to see how they reacted to it.
And how did they react?
Once they came on, it was like all of them looked like their dogs had just died. And that's what. And they gave grudging praise. They gave grudging praise to her for this fabulous speech. But then when you turned on Fox and Friends this morning, which I did at 6 o'clock when it started, it was just a complete trashing of her, doing everything from saying, oh, she wasn't specific enough in the details of the policies. Yeah, well, they wanted her to get wonky, to get into the numbers game during this, inspirational speech. And had she done that, they would have pointed it out. Well, she really missed an opportunity to inspire the crowd because of her obsession with detail. And, we're talking about Fox News, the whorehouse of American journalism. So we have a situation where there's nothing that's going to make them happy. Plus, Trump came on and immediately started with his whining and, among other things, calling Kamala a communist and a Marxist and a socialist and everything. We're back to the old Hollywood red-baiting, blacklisting days.
He's not going to let up, and it smacks of professional wrestling. He even says he's better looking than Kamala.
Right, of course, yes. I'm sure he would think that.
Well, in the latest Real Clear Politics betting odds, Harris 49.2, Trump 49.2. That's today. Dead even. I mean, no separation at all. But 4 weeks ago, Trump was ahead by 30 points, and Harris has closed the gap. In fact, at one point last week, she had moved ahead. It shapes up as a close race, Dan. In fact, the same Real Clear Politics and Nate Silver, they basically say right now Trump has 219 electoral votes wrapped up, including Louisiana's, and Harris has 208.
You know, I and you'll probably know this. Trump has never gotten in a national election, you know, 2016, 2020, he's never gotten over 47% of the vote, never.
Nope.
And and since then there has been, you know, his craziness with regard to his lies about the rigging of the election, you know, January 6th, where he tried to violently overturn the results of the election when Mike Pence, God bless him, the forgotten man here, the vice president whom Trump nearly got killed, you know, where he did the right thing and he made sure that the election was certified. And all of the things that have happened, I find it hard that Trump is going to maintain that 47%. That's why I was sort of looking forward to this, to Kennedy. I mean, this is another conversation, especially.
All right, we'll talk about Bobby Kennedy apparently getting out of the race and backing Donald Trump and more with Dan Moldeo when we return. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WWNO, WRKF, Politics Friday, and one of our favorite guest, Dan Moldea, is with us, the intrepid reporter who in his career has a varied past as far as targets that I think probably is the most diverse in all of journalism. He's written books about everything from the O.J. Simpson trial to the NFL to Jimmy Hoffa to the mob. He has to Ronald Reagan. He has been on the forefront of American journalism now for more than a half century. And on the first day of July, this was 20 days before Joe Biden gave up the ghost and withdrew from the race, Dan said that he thought Biden was dead on arrival. And it was short on this show. And shortly thereafter, Nancy Pelosi got on the phone with her longtime friend and told him that he had to go. And I'm sure that was a difficult conversation, but she actually had a point that others could not make. She gave up the speakership of the U.S. House of Representatives, potentially. She's been speaker and minority leader in the House for many, many moments over the last two decades. Dan Moldea, what a change that made. I don't think Biden was in position to win this election. Others would disagree, including Joe Biden.
Chance. Yeah, no chance. I think Joe Biden has had a come to Jesus moment on this. I think he recognizes fully that the enthusiasm that the entire nation witnessed at the Democratic convention this past week, that he could not have generated that. I mean, it was you were constantly hanging on every word that he spoke, you know, waiting for him to call President Zelensky President Putin, or to describe Kamala Harris as Vice President Trump, which he did in a single day. He made both those gaffes in a single day. And this was on top of so many other things. I started coming out against Biden. I love Biden. I think he's one of the greatest. He's the greatest vice president we ever had for President Obama. And I think he's the greatest one-term president we'll ever have. But after the State of the Union address, when everyone was throwing him accolades, I said the very next day, I agreed. He had a low bar, but he certainly cleared it. But the next day I said he's got to go. And so so to me, after the debate, there was just no doubt about it. He had to go, because this is just too serious. As the vice president said last night, this is very serious stuff that's going on right now, and we need to put our best foot forward, and we have. And she's going to be a wonderful person. But the thing that scares me is that I keep remembering, and I'm sure you remember this, Jim, that in 1988, Michael Dukakis had a 17-point lead on the incumbent president, George H.W. Bush. And the Bush campaign engineered a total attack campaign against Dukakis.
It worked.
And what did Dukakis do? He decided he was going to rise above it and not respond.
Well,
and what happened?
He
lost that 17-point lead, and he lost the election.
And he got in a tank.
Yeah, that was probably the capper.
He got in a tank, and that tanked the campaign. Dan and
With a little hat on, with a little helmet.
I know. Dan in Baton Rouge. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, yeah. Is it also scary that the Gaza issue will not be resolved because Netanyahu favors his fellow autocrat Trump and needs the war to continue to remain Israeli prime minister.
I don't think anybody could have said it better than you just did. That's exactly what the situation is right now. As long as there's chaos, as long as there's warfare, Netanyahu could keep his job and stay out of jail. Yeah, I think that's exactly what
Well, and that issue is working potentially well for Donald Trump. But yesterday he was attacking the governor of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro. What is that all about? Shapiro's not on the ballot for president or vice president.
I think you can't really trust anything Trump says right now. I think he's in the midst of a very slow-moving, very public meltdown, which I think will culminate on the day of the debate. What is that, September 10th, Jim?
Yes.
September 10th, and that's ABC?
Yes, and Harris apparently doesn't want to do a debate with Fox.
Why would she want to do Fox? I mean, Fox is let's remember, Fox had claimed that Dominion voting systems had helped the bad guys rig the election against Donald Trump in 2020. The Fox News people knew it was not true, but they broadcasted it to their viewers anyway.
Well, I would say, if I were in her shoes, I'd say, I'll do a debate on Fox if you do one on MSNBC. And we'll have Rachel Maddow moderating. That would be what we're dealing with. It wouldn't be
fair
to
Trump. Who owns ABC? ABC is owned by Sinclair. We're kind of in a funny clash there, you know, where I don't know who's worse, whether this is the Sinclairs or whether it's Rupert Murdoch. I'm not a big fan of the Sinclairs either, but that's ABC, and they're going to do that one. I thought there was going to be one on CBS, too, or is that just a proposal?
I think at this point we have one solid and probably more to come,
okay.
But... ABC, of course, like all these big broadcasting networks, has bounced around. But does Sinclair or does Disney own it? I thought Disney still owned ABC.
I will stand corrected
okay,
on that.
Okay.
I know Sinclair owns. I think Sinclair owns the local station here in Washington. I think that's where my confusion
there you
is.
Go.
Anyway, my point is that I think that you know Trump is in the midst of a meltdown right now. You know, mercifully, he survived the assassination attempt on, when was that, July 13th. But I have to think that he's very upset that he didn't get a bigger bump in the polls because he survived that horrible attack, which mercifully did not kill him. I mean, I want to see this guy live a long, healthy life so that he can fully be subjected to the repudiation and the humiliation, the public humiliation that
okay,
he's originally deserved.
Okay, you're getting revved up. Let's get some callers to opine, and please be brief with Dan Moldea. Mike in Baton Rouge. Mike, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Yeah, good morning. I was calling to see what Dan thinks about Trump putting on that fundraiser for the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys instead of the Capitol Police that was assaulted by them.
I don't think he put on a fundraiser for the Oath Keepers.
I don't think
I know about that. That's news to me.
No, I don't think that's accurate. But he has defended those people.
And he has
He has basically attacked law enforcement on 1/6 when they were overtaken by a mob. And it was an insurrection. Go ahead.
Well, that's it. That's the other thing, Jim. The other day, Trump had he had these theme days during the Democratic convention, and he had a theme day of crime. And he shows up in Michigan, and he is surrounded and backed up by all these uniformed police officers who are applauding him, applauding his lies. They are laughing at his jokes. His lame jokes and everything else. Now, we're talking about police officers serving as props for a man who has just been convicted on 34 counts of felony fraud and is currently under criminal indictment for violently attempting to overturn the election of 2020. Is this the role that police officers should be playing?
Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, pride of Benton, Louisiana, was on this show a few weeks ago and said that this was because Biden was weaponizing the Justice Department.
Right. That's the same weaponization of the Justice Department that got Bob Menendez, a Democratic senator from New Jersey, convicted, that got the president's own son convicted. He's still under indictment, is going to be facing another trial in September. So the weaponization thing, that's just Trump blowing smoke. Once again, talking about things he knows nothing about, right, and as usual, lying about everything.
Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you're on with Dan Moldea. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Dan. If you were either candidate, and you're even right now in the poll, why debate each other?
Why debate? That's
a question. Why debate?
Well, I think you would debate if you're even. You might not debate if you were far ahead. You know, Richard Nixon never debated anybody after he lost to Kennedy. He didn't debate Pat Brown when he ran for governor of California. He didn't debate George McGovern. He didn't debate Hubert Humphrey. He didn't debate Ronald Reagan and George Romney. He just stayed away from it.
And Trump decided not to debate anybody during the Republican primary this year.
That is true.
He decided he was way ahead. It was just, you know, pointless. But I think that the criticism that Kamala has been getting, that she's not doing interviews, you know, last night was really the first time she's really been officially the Democratic nominee. And her campaign is still young. And I think they had to get some things together here. This is an extraordinary situation, I think we'll all agree. But she had to get something. I'm sure she's going to be doing lots, and Coach Walls are going to be doing lots and lots of interviews, so much so we're probably going to get sick of them.
Right.
But right now they're trying to pull these things together and trying to figure out. Also, she can't speak for the entire Democratic Party. This isn't the Republican Party where whatever Trump says goes, period.
Patrick,
they don't even need a platform.
Baton Rouge. Patrick, you're on with Dan. Good morning, sir.
Hey, a quick comment and question. So when he talked about black jobs, he showed up at a black event by black journalists. So, of course, he's going to talk about black jobs. And a lot of black jobs are industrial truck drivers. They work at plants along the Mississippi River. Up north, they work in manufacturing plants. That's jobs for everybody.
Right. I think she was making a joke. I think she was making a joke.
Well,
Trump wasn't going for a railroad job. He's going for a job that was once held by her husband, a black man.
Well, and I think the implication was that black jobs are menial labor, and
right,
that's why immigrants are taking the black jobs. Well,
right.
Black
yes,
people,
right, exactly.
You know, there are more white people in this country on welfare than there are black people. So I don't
have to be. They
yeah, well, of course.
White people out
of
here,
course,
yeah.
Of course. And there are a lot of poor white people. In fact, David Bitter once addressed workers at a lumber mill in Ruston, and he told them he was going to reward them and get all the people off welfare who are freeloaders. And what he didn't realize was that most of those people were on welfare and working. We'll be back after this with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Dan Moldea in the house for another quarter hour, and he will finish the hour with him, the intrepid reporter with body of work that rivals anyone in American journalism, 877-217-5757. Please be brief. We do have a lot of people waiting to talk with Dan, and we will try to get to as many of you as we can. Lynn in Lafourche Parish. Lynn, you're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Lynn.
Hi there. I have a very, basic issue to talk about, and it's why are the men in politics referred to by their last name, and yet our vice president is referred to as Kamala? I don't get it.
Well, that's a legitimate point.
That's a very interesting. Hillary, you know, we refer
Same
to Hillary,
thing.
We refer to Nancy, we refer to Michelle. You know, I'd have to give that some thought. I think I've heard about, you know, Bill Clinton referred to as Bill. I've heard of Barack Obama referred
yeah.
to as Barack. But I think the woman makes a very interesting point. You're correct.
Well, thank you, Lynn. Let's go to James in Metairie. James, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi, Jim and Dan. Good morning. Quick observation. The audience is on the floor of the two conventions. The RNC looked like a meeting of the White Citizens Council. Hard to find a black face. And the DNC looked just like America. My question is, how do we understand the sizable support that Donald Trump is getting from the black males in view of what he said about the Central Park Five? Thank you.
All right. Well, he is not getting sizable support from black males, but he's getting
bigger. What's the polling on it, Jim?
Well, about 6%, but you know, elections are won at the margins. And if he gets 7% or 8%, that could be the difference in winning or losing. And today, RFK Jr. is apparently going to get out of the race and endorse Trump. And NPR had something this morning saying that polls have shown that would give Trump a 1% bump up. So if that could be the difference, Dan.
Bobby Kennedy Jr. has called me twice. Once in December 2017, and a second time in April of 2018. Our conversations were, and then we had a lot of exchanges, written exchanges back and forth. All of our communications were based on his, his interest in his, in the murder of his father. I consider myself to be the world's expert on the murder of his father. And but Kennedy insists that he had called me when he called me in April of 2018. He said that he had visited Sirhan, his father's confessed and convicted assassin, in prison. And I said, "What'd you think?" And he said, "I don't think he did it." And I said, "Bobby, this is the guy who killed your dad." And Kennedy has gone on this thing where he's been this crusade that's turned into a QAnon-like pro-Sirhan cult, where he's trying to get Sirhan released from jail. My point is that during my communication, and we had a huge falling out in the midst of all of this, but I don't know the guy well, but I do know that he was a little crazy. But I do not believe that he is stupid. And if he were to come out today and endorse Donald Trump, that would be stupid, because they're saying, oh, he wants a job on the cabinet. I want to see that Senate confirmation where Bobby Kennedy Jr. is nominated by Trump for whatever job. There is no way that Bobby Kennedy could get Senate confirmation.
I'm with you. He's been on
the... my point is he's stupid if he endorses Trump.
Well, he's probably going to do it, and he's at odds with his family. His family and Trump have a long feud, by the way. Trump wanted to build the world's largest building at the site of the old Ambassador Hotel on Wilshire Boulevard, 3400 Wilshire Boulevard, where Bobby Kennedy was shot.
Remember that very well. The crime scene,
yeah. And the family wanted to build a school, and some of us wanted the Ambassador Hotel to be restored. Well, the school ended up getting built, and Trump and RFK Jr. Are on the other side, and apparently they're going to unite. We'll see what happens. Craig in Natchitoches. Craig, please be brief. You're on with Dan.
Yeah, I was wondering, considering what I understand, RFK Jr. is only on, of the seven swing states, he's only on the ballot in Michigan, Georgia, and North Carolina. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, but Dan, do you think that can affect the race?
Well, if he gets out, I don't think they've printed the ballots yet, so I think he would be off the ballot, which presumably...
I don't know how that works. I thought it was more states than that, sir. I know he's on several states, but I thought it was more than that, but I could be wrong. But what's he polling at right now, Jim? What 5%?
No. Well, I don't know. So earlier polls had him at 5%, but that's another thing. He's been coming back to the pack, and he no longer is.
He's done some bizarre, the bear thing.
Well, I mean, and saying that a worm, he actually said a worm ate part of his brain. He actually said that, but
apparently that was confirmed. Well, that there is some sort of a condition where something like that could happen, which could explain so much.
Right.
But I don't want to make fun.
Harris in the now, mind you, a Democrat will probably needs to win the overall vote by 3 or 4% to win because of the Electoral College. Harris is up in the overall vote 1.5 nationally, and she's up by 2 with Kennedy in. So he, according to that polling, would make about a 0.5% difference in favor of Trump, which, as stated, could end up in being the difference in winning and losing. Bill in Prairieville. Bill, you're on with Dan. Good morning.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to make a comment, something I've been thinking about since last night, that there's a person in this country who has a resume whose work experience includes McDonald's and Vice President of the United States, and may soon include President of the United States. And I think that's remarkable. And should teach everyone that don't look down your nose at any job.
You're talking about the governor of Minnesota?
No, I'm talking about Kamala.
I'm talking about Kamala.
I got you.
Remember what Bill Clinton said? He said Kamala's going to break his record as the president who spent the most time at McDonald's.
And to me, the gentleman is exactly right.
And what that is, sir, it's America. It's America.
Yeah. Charles in New Roads. Thank you, Bill. I appreciate that tidbit. Charles, good morning. Hi, you're on with Dan. Hi, Charles.
Good morning. Good morning. I have a question for Dan. Many of my friends and associates still have the idea that Lee Harvey Oswald did not shoot JFK. I'm just wondering what his opinion is.
All right. He wrote a book about it. He believes that
I wrote a book about Jimmy Hoffa. I wrote a book about Jimmy Hoffa in 1978, 46 years ago. And in that book, I was the first person to claim that Jimmy Hoffa, Carlos Marcello, a guy who I'm sure you're familiar with, and Santo Trafficante, the mafia boss of Tampa, Florida, arranged and executed the murder. The House Select Committee on Assassinations came out a year after my book came out, and they said that Hoffa, Marcello, and Trafficante had motive, means, and opportunity to have the president murdered, and the chief counsel of the committee, Bob Blakey, the world's expert on the mafia, said the mob did it. It's a historical fact.
David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Thank you, Jim. Mr. Maldé, you're a wonderful human being. May you be blessed.
Hey, David, how are you?
Well, sir, thank you. And I hope to talk to you again soon. But Kamala Harris has been accused of being a communist and a Marxist by Trump, Fox Channel, and others because she's against price gouging. Well, many, many states have laws in the United States against price gouging, including Republican Texas, Republican Mississippi, Republican Alabama, and Republican Florida. So I guess all
those
governors...
Excuse me, David. Is he saying price gouging? Or is he saying... I think that's what she's against is price gouging. But what he's saying is price fixing.
He's saying price controls. Right. But that's not price gouging.
Exactly.
So
what she's
saying, all those states, all those Republicans must be communist Marxists.
Right. As you know, David, this guy lies about everything.
Well, Dan, this election appears is going to be very tight. And I last night I saw Dr. Bill Arsenault, longtime Louisiana Politico, and he says the Dems are going to win big. And people can feel it. They can feel it. But on the Republican side,
yeah, I felt it in 2016. I felt there was no way Hillary could lose. No way.
Well, there you go. What happens?
There we go. Right?
One side is just going to really be upset, and I mean really upset at the outcome. What will that do to our country?
You know, it just depends. I mean, Trump has been very threatening and has used some very violent language. But
when I said one side, I meant either side, really. But yeah,
the Republicans
won't accept Harris. Democrats won't accept Trump.
What happened in 2016? Hillary lost. Shockingly. What did she do? She picked up the phone. She made a concession call to Trump. The next day, she made a classy concession speech. And then she showed up at his inauguration. What did Trump do when Biden beat him? No concession call, no concession speech, and he refused to show up at the inauguration. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about living by American values and traditions and being a jerk. And Trump is a jerk.
Phil in Baton Rouge, you'll be our final caller for Dan. Please be brief. Hi, Phil.
Good morning, sir. Yes. What about WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, some of those elements
Assange?
Coming out? And isn't it wonderful that Mr. Assange is free?
Assange. That's Mr. Assange. He's saying it's wonderful that he's free. Dan?
I've never been a big fan of Assange. With respect to you, sir, I've never been a big fan of that guy. And I don't know that I think that a civilian could unilaterally release documents like that. I was troubled by that. I was troubled by those guys in the military who did the same thing, these low-level soldiers who just unilaterally released national security documents.
We do have to go, but Dan, always a pleasure. Thanks, and we'll be in touch. Until next week, stay safe and stay tuned.